Former Second Lady of the United States Liz Cheney has spent decades studying the nation's fourth president, James Madison. The result of that labor is the new 564-page book, James Madison, A Life Reconsidered. Father of the Constitution, principal author of the Bill of Rights, founder of the first opposition party, Secretary of State, and fourth president, was a masterful politician who Cheney believes, despite all his accomplishments, has been overshadowed by other founders. Liz Cheney is the wife of former Vice President Dick Cheney, is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and is the author of 12 books, several on American history, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her back to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, I'm so happy to be here.
Very nice to have you here. You were with us a year ago when this book first came out. What has the last year been of being in Madison's world, if you will, and talking about him at such length?
Well, it makes me ever more happy that I wrote the book I did. I'd been thinking about it for so long, and the process itself was a pretty long one, 5 years. It takes that long, you know, to write a big biography. But still, I know some people think that, you know, is a little demented to spend that much time on one project about one person. But I think my choice to spend time that way has only been personally ratified for me over the past year as I've talked to people and sensed, really, there's a great longing among so many people to know more about the history of the founding. We've kind of gotten away from teaching history as well as we used to. And just in terms of knowing who the presidents were and knowing what the Constitution is. And what I hope is that through biography we can make those stories so compelling that lots of people will become more familiar with them.
The title of the book, as I mentioned, is James Madison, A Life Reconsidered. Why did you feel that a reconsideration was necessary?
Well, I think there's a stereotype of Madison as a sort of shy little guy who wasn't all that important, and it's just such a contradiction to the facts, which are, just if you talk about the Constitution, he was absolutely indispensable. I don't think there would be a Constitution if James Madison hadn't gone to the efforts he did. He made sure that George Washington attended the convention. He rode all the way to Congress, which is in New York at that time, to settle some issues that might have hindered the Constitutional Convention. He set out the agenda. Now, that's just such an important lesson for all of us. He who controls the agenda, or she who does, has a great deal of power. So he wrote the Virginia Plan, which was, in essence, the plan that was followed, though not adopted entirely, at the convention. Afterward, he wrote the Federalist Papers with Alexander Hamilton to encourage ratification of the Constitution. He went to Virginia and was a principal voice against powerful opponents like Patrick Henry to get the Constitution ratified in what was the most powerful state. Well, I don't mean to go on too long, but the story is so deep and important, and we need to appreciate it.
Talk a little bit about the formative years of what it was that brought him to this point to be able to achieve so much.
He was a bookish person. He, as a child, read an 18th century publication called The Spectator, which is worth reading today. It's essays that were published in England. His grandmother ordered them. And James read them, and you can see the influence of the sort of good humanity. The Spectator was funny, and it was warm, and it was human, but it was also very learned. And this is what he was reading as a boy. He went to a very good boarding school. He went to Princeton. So he was really, really smart. He was also, I think, just a decent fellow, and I think Dolly helped people understand on a personal level what a good and congenial person he was. But so he was really smart. He was a great politician. and he was smart enough to marry Dolly.
I want to talk about that relationship with Dolly Madison in just a moment. You write in the prologue to the book that Madison did not make a show of himself, but neither did he lack vanity. His jacket and breeches were finely made, his stockings usually silk. He powdered his hair and combed it forward to a point in order to cover a receding hairline. And unassuming though he might seem, he did not hesitate to take on enormous projects. So a bit of a contradiction there.
It's interesting. I think he reserved his energy for accomplishment rather than show. You know, he didn't go out and shake hands and clap people on the back. He wasn't one for flowery rhetoric, but I think it was John Marshall, who later became Chief Justice of the United States, said, if eloquence is convincing people when you speak, there's no one more eloquent than James Madison, which is a very high compliment since he and Marshall didn't get along.
Talk a little bit about his time at Princeton and really coming home. You write early on in the book about the season of discontent, of really having a state of deep despondency and not quite knowing what he was going to do.
Part of the problem was that he had what I am convinced was an epileptic seizure at Princeton. The first, probably. He may have had some seizures as a child, but not the kind of thing you would label epilepsy. But something happened at Princeton, and the letter has been destroyed that John Witherspoon, who was president, took to Madison's father. But Madison wrote about it, though he didn't publish it later in his life, about his having suffered through epileptic seizures somewhat resembling epilepsy through his life. This was a terrible psychological blow while he was at Princeton. Epilepsy was totally misunderstood. It was thought to be a disease that demonic possession brought on. To be faced with that early in your life when you have so much potential did lead him into a state of very deep sadness, despondency. He couldn't bring himself to go home for about a year, even though he was finished at Princeton. And when he got there, the letters he wrote to one of his friends are just so sad and full of thoughts that he would die very soon, that this world wasn't for him. I think that, in a way, the revolution saved him. It gave him big things to get himself involved in. And the kind of epilepsy he had was of a sort that he could hide. He didn't have to have these things happen in public, though I think they sometimes did, where, he fell to the ground and rise. For the most part, it was just, he called it a suspension of his intellectual functions. Mm. So I found this just fascinating, that a man who had achieved so much had done it in spite of this debility.
Lynn Chaney is our guest. Her new book is James Madison, A Life Reconsidered. What's fascinating is 23, 24 years old, he is by far the youngest member of the Orange County Committee of Safety. He was elected to attend the Virginia Convention in 1776. What was it about him that led him to this really high honor?
I think it was just his intellectual heft. He had read a lot, and he understood how the parts fit together, and he learned from what he had read. Before the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, he'd had Jefferson send him trunkfuls of books. Jefferson was in Paris representing the United States at the time, and so he had access to books that Madison didn't. And he read about republics. That's what he thought, what many of the framers thought and the founders thought should be created. But one that was large had never succeeded. So Madison made it his job to read about all the republics that had been tried, to figure out what had gone wrong, and to figure out, could you make a republic succeed, and how could you do it? if it was a republic of vast extent, if it covered a territory that was very large. So he brought all of this learning that he'd been working on all along, both to the convention in Virginia and to the one in Philadelphia. If you wanted to know the answer to a question about how to form a government and what the difficulties and the details were, Madison was your go-to guy.
You write in the book that he had read enough history to know that he was certainly at the center of something huge and that something massive was happening. And what I found interesting is that he was very optimistic.
Well, he, I think, was by nature an optimist. He, like the other framers, particularly the ones from Virginia, thought of the times they lived in as a way to make a mark that people would remember forever. It was a kind of ambition, but it was a very good kind of ambition. He was maybe the hardest working of the founders.
Talk a little bit about his meeting of Dolly Madison and the importance of that relationship.
One of the curiosities of history, especially if you're reading about the early period, is how small the world was. So, you know, everybody knew everybody else. Madison had gone to Princeton with a fellow named Aaron Burr, and Aaron Burr happened to know Dolly. So when Madison saw the gorgeous Dolly walking down the street, he asked his friend Aaron Burr to introduce them. And Burr did, and Madison went to Dolly's parlor, and she greeted him wearing a mulberry velvet dress and yellow glass beads. And, of course, it was all over for him. He proposed, they married shortly thereafter, and I don't think he could have chosen a better helpmate. Dolly was a warm and welcoming person. She made everyone feel happy to be at the house that she and James had in Washington when he was Secretary of State. They came so gladly to be greeted by her, and her Southern comfort food was quite popular. And she made sure that all of them had a chance to talk to James, who was standing over by the fireplace, and thus really gave them a chance to see what a nice person he was, as well as being a very smart fellow.
So it seems as if you're saying much of the relationship was her setting him up for success, of putting him in the right places at the right time.
That's true, but if you're going to be out there where you might be successful, you had better be prepared, and there was no one who was ever better prepared for any occasion than James Madison.
How influential was she in his thinking of issues? And because you talk of him being a man of great thought, of what role did she play in that, and how much did he consider her thoughts and words?
I think very little. She was not a political advisor, not a helpmate in that sense. But she was the love of his life and very important to his political success.
When you think about the moments that obviously went on to become the first president to lead the nation in war under the Constitution, what was it about him that through his experiences of obviously advising Washington, of being a leader, to be able to take that role, not only as president, but as commander-in-chief as well?
You know, it's very interesting that it was because of James Madison that the president was commander-in-chief. At the Constitutional Convention, the proposal had been that the Congress should make war. And Madison leapt to his feet and changed the word make to declare, which meant then that the executive, the president, was the one in charge of the process of the war. He was the commander-in-chief. I think Madison didn't bring great military experience to the office. He did, though, bring the idea that the military was important, and the idea as well that the preservation of civilian rights were important. But just because people were saying things about the war or about the president that were unpleasant, the war didn't give you an excuse to quiet them. He was, from the beginning, a great advocate of free speech and of intellectual freedom. And when many people advocated during the war that he put some of those New Englanders in jail who were saying seditious things and advocating separation from the Union, he ignored them and, I think, did the country a great service.
In this life that you ask us to reconsider in the book, what do you believe we can take away from the story, take away from James Madison, that we can look at and put into some practice when we deal with our current trials and tribulations?
Oh, there's so much. I think one thing is to understand the enormity of what they accomplished, and Madison in particular got accomplished. It was so hard a task. It took such genius and such effort to create this country and to get it started. We sometimes have the idea that it's all inevitable, you know, and that the blessings we enjoy are going to be here forever no matter what. And I think to understand how difficult it was to establish this country, to remember that the founders, and Madison especially, thought of it as an experiment, is very useful as we go about our day-to-day lives, to understand that these things didn't happen inevitably. They were the result of human effort, and that the preservation and the continuation of this amazing nation is a responsibility that we all need to accept.
Well, the name of the book is James Madison, A Life Reconsidered. It is now out in paperback from Penguin. Lynn Chaney, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this morning and for sharing with us. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. You asked great questions, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, Lynn Chaney is the author of the new book, James Madison, A Life Reconsidered, now out in paperback from Penguin. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.